Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. And today we're going to be talking with Debbie, who has a compelling story about something that you probably have not thought about and certainly wouldn't believe could happen to you. Debbie is Debbie Montgomery Johnson. She's a number one best-selling author and international speaker, and she's the former Voice America radio host, and she's a businesswoman. She is a woman with a mission. In her book, The Woman Behind the Smile, she shares her personal experience with a love that turned into betrayal and financial disaster, and she removes the mask of shame and shows others how to do the same. I know as legal nurse consultants, you've worked on cases in which people's lives have turned upside down, and many of them are embarrassed and upset and suffer a loss of face, changes in roles, identity. Sometimes think, well, particularly if they've been in an accident, how could I have avoided that? How could I have been so stupid? Debbie talks about this same kind of syndrome, but in a different context. And I think it's important for you to hear her story to understand some warning signs and some things that can happen to people that you wouldn't imagine would ever occur. Debbie is currently the president of Benfo Tamin, which is a website called benfocomplete.com. And she'll talk a little bit at the end of the program about what her company does. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. I'm really delighted to be here.
First of all, let's set some context for our listeners. This is a show about online dating, which for many people who are listening who are single, sounds very benign. You go on a website, you look at profiles, you find somebody who looks appealing, they're in your geographic area, you get to know them, and life blossoms, or maybe that relationship goes nowhere. So I understand that you were involved in online dating. What led you to try that method of meeting people?
Well, it started 6 years ago, I guess 8 years ago, this is 2018. 8 years ago, my husband of 26 years passed away suddenly. And that in itself is a life changer because, you know, we've been married 26 years, we were rocking along. He goes away on a business trip, and I get a phone call the next day from my oldest son, and it was, "Mom, Dad just died. I'm coming home to take care of everything." Well, you certainly don't ever anticipate that phone call. And so that threw me into running Lewis Company, working my job and trying to, I am a mom of four, grandmother of four now, but it just changed my life in such a way that I isolated myself because I was learning how to run Lewis Company. And my friends came up to me and said, "You know what? You need a life." This is 6 months after Lou died. I was working 20 hours a day because being alone for the first time in so many years, alone all night long, it was very difficult for me to go to sleep at night and not have anything move in my bed. So they said, "Look, Deb, try online dating. It's safe. You can do it from the security of your office, your home, and you can put out there what you want. Look perfect." And that's what I always thought I needed to do, is have the perfect profile, put out the perfect words, and just kind of dip my toe into something safe. And I went to, at the time, faith-based dating sites for the most part. I wanted to have like-minded individuals. And so that's what I did. I put my toe in and I tried a little bit, but I was totally amazed at the type of men that were out there between 55 and 65. They appeared in their photos, what I call the wife beater t-shirts, many of them, or they're, you know, had other girls in their pictures, and I'm thinking, "Oh, why am I doing this? I don't want to get involved in something like this." But then I was contacted by a very good looking man, you know, his pictures. He was 55. I was 52 at the time. He was a widower, had one son. He was from England, an international contractor. It was just very appealing to me because I own my own company now. It's an international business and I could go at my own pace. You know, I stayed on the website with him for a while where we basically email each other. It wasn't a very easy thing to do. It's basically emails. So there was a lot of time in between the emails. And after about a week or two, he moved me onto Yahoo Chat. He said, Deb, there's a way. I'm traveling. He was at the time in Houston. He said, I'm going to be traveling overseas to the Far East. I have a job over there. Come on to Yahoo Chat. Let me show you how to do this. It's basically instant messaging. And we could do it from any computer, any phone, anywhere, and be on for hours. So I did it. I jumped right in. And his name was Eric Cole, Dr. Eric Cole. And we had an extraordinary friendship that started off around Thanksgiving when I stayed online all day long telling what Thanksgiving dinner was about here in America. So I did it because I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't party much. I was not one that would normally go out to a bar to look for a date. So I don't know many 50-year-olds that, at least my friends, don't like doing that. So this was a safe thing to do. And it was kind of fun.
What did your friends and family say about doing online dating with Eric?
They were delighted. One of the first people I told was my mom. I figured, oh my gosh, if I can get it past mom, I can get it past anybody. And we were traveling up to see my brothers in Virginia, and I told her in the airport, and she started to laugh. She kind of giggled. And she said, you know what? My best friend met her husband online. And this was a woman that was in her, probably at the time, her mid-70s. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if mom's girlfriend could find somebody, then why can't I? Now, my sister-in-laws were delighted. My brothers were a little different. They kind of put me in a half circle, and I felt like the Spanish Inquisition. They were just blasting me with questions about who is he? We've got to do a background check. We've got to do a financial check. I'm like, you guys, just relax. It's just for fun. And my girlfriends were all for it. They wanted me to be happy. They didn't want me to be alone and by myself working all the time. They wanted me to have a little bit of joy in my life again. And they're thrilled. So.
And how did your husband die? I didn't ask you that question, but he would have been fairly young, right?
He was 55. It was April 8th, 2010. He was 55, turning 56. And because you deal with nurses, Lou was a big guy. He was 6'4". He was about 300 pounds at the time of his death. He was diabetic, but he had it under control. He was on insulin. And, you know, he suffered neuropathy and sciatica and all those things associated with diabetes. He did not take his diabetes completely seriously. Obviously, his weight went up and down over the years. I mean, when we met, he was 210 pounds. And I always teased, for every child I had, he gained the weight that I lost. And his doctor was one of his best friends. His heart was okay. I mean, everything appeared to be okay. He was just a big guy. I always worried because I saw that, you know, he wore a sweatpants a lot and a t-shirt. He would ride his bike. He wouldn't get a lot of exercise because it's so hot down here in Florida, and he just hated being so hot. But I noticed that his legs started to go a little bit brown and the skin turned a little bit brown. And I found out later on that it was probably a peripheral artery disease where the circulation just wasn't good in his feet. But the Benfitimine, the company that he founded, the vitamin supplement was very good for him. And so it helped with the numbness and the pins and needles of his neuropathy. So he didn't really feel like he was not as healthy as he really thought he was. So anyway, he went on a trip. He had a race car, and he took it over to the west coast of Florida, not far from you, to get it tuned up for a big race down in Miami. And he left on a Wednesday morning. And Thursday morning, I got a phone call that he was dead. And he'd woken up that morning and looked at the man beside him and said, there's my truck over there. Please go take my stuff and put it in the truck. Call 911. I'm having a heart attack. and he was dead in a half an hour. He was 10 minutes from the hospital, and he basically died on the way to the hospital. Had a massive heart attack, and completely surprised his friend, who was his doctor. You know, but he had yo-yo dieted his whole life. When he was in the Air Force, he would lose weight for the annual weigh-in, and then he would put it back on. He would, you know, he would fast. He would go into the weight rooms. He would do everything he can to drop weight quickly. And he was just addicted to sugar. He loved to eat. And even after he didn't have gastric bypass, but he had a lap band surgery, lost a lot of weight. Multiple times he would lose up to 100 pounds, but then he would put it back on. And I'm sure that that yo-yoing up and down over all the years just did a number on his heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I never expected Lou to live to be 100 years old, but I never expected him to die at 55. Mm-hmm. It was just something that completely threw me off. And, you know, it's interesting. I tell people to really be prepared for something like this happening, because, you know, if you don't expect it, then it's going to happen. And I'm pretty prepared on things, but 2 months before Lou died, because he was going into another age group, he canceled our life insurance because it went from $100 a month to $500 a month, and he didn't want to pay it anymore. And so he canceled our life insurance, and then 2 months later, he's dead, with leaving me no life insurance. He left me the company, and I had to learn how to run it. But, you know, if you're going to do something as drastic as dropping your life insurance, which you've had for 30, 35 years, make sure that you've got something set aside for your spouse or for your kids, because it was a life changer, a game changer for me. And wow. I'm very, very fortunate that I'm, you know, still have a roof over my head. So, so going into online dating was a real challenge, because, you know, yeah. I hadn't dated since I was 26, 25.
Right.
And, you know, all those anxieties of I'm not pretty enough, not smart enough, not all everything that goes through your mind when you're 16. At 52, it was a challenge, you know, to put myself out there again. And it took great courage and a good kick in the butt by my friends.
Well, tell us what happened with Eric. Can you unfold the story for us and give us some more details?
I can. And this happens quite a lot, actually, because Eric was a businessman, international. I own a company. I understood what he was doing. He actually brokered hardwood trees. And I have trees as an investment in Costa Rica. He didn't know that. But when he was overseas, he was working at the time in Malaysia, moving a lot of trees, like hundreds of thousands of trees for developers over in India. And so throughout the process of his business, he would run into issues with customs or with tariffs or with shipping. And for those of us that have businesses, you sometimes don't get paid until after the job is over. And you have to front all the expenses prior to getting paid. And I understood that. So as time went on, Eric and I, you know, we got to be really, really close emotionally and mentally, and obviously not physically because he was overseas. But we wrote to each other every day for hours. And honestly, on Yahoo chat, because it's like texting, instant messaging, we would hold these conversations for hours. And so I got to really know who he was, and I got to know his son and his sister and his attorney and all these people in his life. And when he started having some troubles with getting the job done, he asked if I would help him financially. And I did. Now, I've got to give you a little background on me. I'm very frugal. When Lou died, obviously without the life insurance, I had the company to keep me going. So I was very careful with my money. I tried to pay off as much as I could after Lou died, just by, I had one opportunity. One time when I missed the deadline on a credit card bill, and I have exemplary credit scores, and the credit card company took my rate from like 2% to 21%, and I was floored that they would do that because I missed it by, you know, a week. And so I wrote to them or called them, and they were like, well, we're really sorry. And I said, I'll never let that happen again. I paid off that card, canceled that card. And I was very, very careful with the bills. And so when Eric asked me to help him, it was a little bit at the beginning. And then over time, because I really had fallen in love with this guy and felt he was going to come home to me as soon as the job was over, whatever I could do to help him get the job done faster, I did. And if it was, you know, $2,000 here, $5,000 here, over time, it turned out to be a lot more than that. But I just felt like, you know, I was going to help him. And then 2 years into it, you know, you've given so much of your life and your time that you don't want to break it off thinking that maybe this isn't really going to work out, because you're so invested emotionally, financially, spiritually, all that, that you're just like, one more, just one more, and then he'll be home. And that was always my thought, is one more issue and then get it done and he'll come home. And so, you know, I always felt too that people would be honest with me. I mean, I'm an honest person. People I deal with are always honest. I never ever anticipated anybody lying to me. And I had never heard of any issues with online dating. All my friends that had done online dating, many of them actually had married the men that they had met. So that was my thought as far as online dating goes. And you know, 2 years into a relationship, that's pretty serious, even though he wasn't here in person. But I got to tell you that I wasn't ready for the physical relationship after Lou died. So developing a friendship with him online and through writing and some phone calls was a really solid foundation for me. It was safe for me because I knew that he was going to provide the financial background, you know, the financial security for us when he got here. And in the process of our relationship, we really got to know each other. And I knew him better, I think, than probably Lou, because, and he knew me too, because I was able to write things so much more extensively and articulately than I could have ever spoken them to him. So I learned the value of journaling through that whole process, and ended up with 4,000 pages of journal printed in 5 volumes. It's extraordinary.
Let me ask you another question. Are you on top of all the intricacies of running a legal nurse consulting business? There is so much to keep track of, and it's easy to put your head down, work on cases, and postpone the business management and development activities that will sustain you. In fact, the twin evils of perfectionism and procrastination will prevent you from being fully effective and lead to sleepless nights. You can easily reach a stressed out state as a business owner. In my book, How to Manage Your Legal Nurse Consulting Business, Top Tips for Success, I share tips for effectively and efficiently running your legal nurse consulting business. These are the tips I learned from running a multi-million dollar independent legal nurse consulting business. This book is part of a series designed to give you the essential knowledge you need to grow your business. Don't learn things the hard way. Make a small investment with me and a big investment for yourself. Order my book, How to Manage Your LNC Business, at the show notes for this podcast. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount.
Story is that almost 2 years to the date into it, he came on one morning and he said, "Deb, you know, how do you feel about forgiveness?" Well, over the years, you know, we've talked church, we've talked spirit, we've talked relationships, and I basically put on what I call my spiritual hat, and we had a long discussion about forgiveness, and I started thinking, you know, you really have to put your money where your mouth is when you're talking about forgiveness, because, you know, lip service for forgiveness isn't going to help anybody. So about 2 hours into it, we got disconnected, which wasn't unusual for internet over where he was in Malaysia. And when he came back on, he said, "Do you remember our conversation?" I said, "Absolutely." He goes, recount to me what you said about forgiveness. And I did. And I'm like, is there something wrong? What have I done that we're having this conversation? See how it goes to what have I done? And he said, "No." He said, "I have something to tell you. I know it's going to hurt you. I have a confession to make." And at that, I'm like, "Oh, I don't know if I want to go there." I had heard a confession once when Lou and I were married, and it wasn't a very positive confession. And I'm like, Eric, you know, are you sick? Is something wrong? And he says, no, I have a confession to tell you. This whole thing has been a scam. And I'm thinking, what? What are you talking about? Are you ill? And he goes, no, this has been a scam. The whole 2 years has been a scam. And I'm like, now you're lying. I said, you got to prove to me that this is a scam. I've invested my life and a lot of money with you. So this is, you know, explain to me what's going on. And he said, Deb, on Yahoo Chat, there's the ability, there's a little camera, and I can come on live. And of course, at that, I'm thinking, well, for 2 years, I've asked you to Skype and come on live, and you said you couldn't do it. Well, he walked me through it, and I've got on my screensaver on my computer, I had his picture. And just a lovely man. And I'm looking at his picture, and I'm looking at the little camera on the screen, and all of a sudden pops up live a dark-haired, dark-eyed, dark-skinned young man with a big smile on his face saying, hey, Deb, how are you doing? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what has just happened? And it turns out that this young man is not named Eric. His name was Joseph, and Joseph was from Nigeria. And Joseph confessed because he said he had fallen in love with me and didn't want to hurt me anymore and realized he couldn't take any more money from me. And he's like, can we keep this going? And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, are you out of your mind? And he said, I said something like that. And he said, is it because I'm black and from Nigeria? I'm thinking, well, maybe, but no, you've stolen my life and you've taken from me over $1 million. And I can hear everybody going, you know, I didn't have $1 million to give to him over those 2 years. But I felt like he was family and he was coming home to me. And I would do anything for my family, you know? And so I sold gold jewelry that I wasn't using. I sold silver that I had. I cashed in my retirement accounts thinking that we'd have a grace period and I can get the money back because he always promised me the money was coming back. And now, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, it was a gift from God, I believe, that he confessed in person because most scammers will walk away. They'll leave you high and dry. You'll never know what happened to them. Mm-hmm. I would have thought he died. It would have been worse for me than when Lou died because now I was part of it and I had given him so much. But I had my camera, my phone right beside me. And I actually, I mean, as soon as I saw him, again, the gift from God was that the story now became a story. It was not my life. And my Air Force intelligence hat kicked in, my legal hat kicked in, all the training I'd had in my lifetime kicked in. I took my phone and I took a picture of the little camera on the screen, you know, this little screen. So I have a picture of him and it's in my book. And it was the only picture that I had of him, of the real person.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out from that time that, you know, the pictures that scammers are using are real people. I have two men friends in California. Their pictures from Facebook or other social media have been taken by scammers, and they're using them as profiles to scam other people. So, it's amazing to me how well-trained these guys are. I've learned a lot in 6 years about what they do and how they do it and how effective they are at the psychology of, you know, a very vulnerable person or the psychology of scamming somebody. They actually teach scammers how to scam over in Nigeria. They have universities where they are training them how to scam. Online dating, the IRS calls that we get, the grandma and the grandma calls, a lot of those are coming from India. Yep. Many come from Ghana. I mean, it's a worldwide problem that you may not hear about because victims such as I typically do not want to tell. It's embarrassing. It's, oh my gosh, I was so upset at what happened. But I was well trained. I was well educated. And for me to have been taken was just something that was, I didn't want to admit. I didn't want to admit it to myself. I certainly didn't want to tell anybody. But it came about, I did tell my parents because I had asked them for $100,000 and they gave it to me and we gave it to Eric. So now my parents were involved and that, I think, of the whole thing hurt me the most because mm-hmm. I had I love my parents and I'm taking care of them as best I can now. I mean, my dad works for me and I do everything I can to make that up to them because they trusted in the process. I mean, my dad will tell you at one point he thought perhaps it was a scam, but 2 years in, he's like, no one can scam you for 2 years. And so my dad and mom came over as soon as they heard what happened and they went to the FBI with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We went in and, you know, you watch TV and you think, oh my gosh, the FBI can do anything, you know? So I walked in with my 4,000 pages of journal and my 3-ring binder with every transaction, financial transaction I had. And they basically said, Deb, you know, we're really sorry. There's nothing we can do for you unless you can get him here to the United States. And I'm thinking, I was speechless. And at that point, What I describe it as is I put up the mask. I put up the mask of I'm fine, I'm okay. I put on my smile. My friends are like, well, what happened to Eric? It just didn't work out. You know, my kids, what happened to what's going on? I didn't tell them a thing. And it eats you up. You know, I could forgive him, but I couldn't forgive myself for what I thought was just being so stupid. And even the FBI said, Deb, look, you know, you are a victim to this. They are so manipulative. They know how to do it. And in Palm Beach County, actually, more men get scammed for over $1 million than women. But a man will never tell you that it happened. And I understood why. I didn't ever want to tell what was going on. But over the years, I was challenged to tell. Only because there are so many people being hurt by this. Because we're not telling. And that became my mission. My mission was to expose them as best I could, to let them know, to let other people. I have a lot of friends that are in their mid-50s that either are divorced or widowed, and they want to get out and date again. And I'm like, online dating is a great platform. Just be careful what you're doing. And if you don't see the man in person within 2 weeks, is my goal, and see the whites of his eyes in person, he's a scammer.
Tell us more, because I think the odds are high that at least one person listening to the show is involved in online dating or thinking about online dating, and they're probably sitting on the edge of their seat saying, oh my God, if it happened to her, it could happen to me. What should they be looking for? What are the warning signs other than what people said?
I hope they're thinking that, because many times I get women that said, oh, that could never have happened to me. Well, I would have been one of those women saying that could never have happened to me. I was well-trained as a bank manager to see scamming checks and all that kind of stuff. But they are very, very creative. Now, what'll happen is they'll either be an international businessman or an engineer. Some actually pretend to be military officers, which gripes me the most because I was Air Force and my kids are active duty. Anybody in a military uniform is not going to be on a dating site. So as soon as you see the uniforms, it's a scam. Many of them are on Facebook now. Actually, I had a friend that got scammed playing an online game. I don't know how that works. They've gotten very creative in what they do. But let's, for instance, on Facebook, if the profile's on Facebook, look and see who their friends are. You know, sometimes they try to friend you by having mutual friends. I had one man try to be my friend, and he had 4 or 5 of my friends as his mutual friends. But I looked at the rest of his friends, and they were nobody that we knew. So I actually contacted my 4 or 5 friends and said, do you know who this guy is? No, we don't. I'm like, you guys, unfriend him, you know? Be careful, because they'll want you to get off the dating site. They'll want to take you from, say, Match.com or whatever site you're on, Plenty of Fish, and they'll move you to Yahoo Chat. And they're informally called the Yahoo Boys, because in the past, they would get together in internet cafes in groups of 6 or more, and they would be on Yahoo, and they would be chatting, so they were the Yahoo Boys. So if you don't see them, like I said, within 2 weeks in person, because I heard a great thing this morning on one of the CBS shows. They're talking about all the new online dating apps on your phone. It's all the swipe left, swipe right. I don't know how that works. But they had a group of people that were between 50 and 65, they're online dating. And one of the women there, she was a little bit older, she said the reason to be online dating or to be on one of the apps is to meet somebody, to see if you want to be friends with somebody. What the online scammers will do is they'll very quickly move you from being a friend to expressing great adoration and love for you. And that just draws you in because, I mean, I wasn't looking for love, but I was looking for someone that could love me again. You know, I was hurt by Lou dying. I was mad. I was sad. I was all these things. And I found out from one of our friends, Marty Ward, that over the years, my heart had a hole in it because I hadn't been listened to. Lou was, like I said, Lou was a big guy. He was bold. He was brilliant. But he also, I didn't like contention, and it was usually his way. And Eric, because he wrote to me and he talked to me, he filled up that hole over time. And it was a gift that he did that. But I also realized that every time he answered back to me or was, you know, communicating with me, he was just building the story to how he was the man for me. And he isolated me from my friends, from my kids, from my parents, because I didn't want to tell them what was going on. You know, when my kids said, Mom, don't send money, that's the first thing I tell people, don't send money. Could someone have told me that? No, because I did. Here's the kicker. The very first time I sent money was about $40, and I didn't send it to him. He had a friend, another engineer overseas, that was having a hard time getting onto the dating site. So he said, Deb, would you mind just sending a check in for this guy to get him registered? I'm thinking, oh, great, more men on the dating site. How much fun is that? Could that be? Well, I found out recently, the reason they do that is because the dating sites will actually verify individuals' profiles, and they'll do it more if you pay, kind of pay to play. And so I found out that I had just verified a scammer's profile, and it just killed me when I found out that that's what had happened. It killed me. And then I found out too that a lot of the money that these scammers are taking, and I work with women that, you know, were scammed out of $400,000 to $500,000 in 4 to 5 months. They're getting very fast as far as doing that. But this money can be used for terrorism. It funds Boko Haram. It funds child, you know, the, I'm having a brain cramp on taking kids. I mean, it's being...
Or kidnapping.
Yeah, it's being used for very, very bad things. And when I was in the process of helping Eric, none of that ever crossed my mind. None of it. I mean, the fact that he was not the real person never crossed my mind. Now, were there red flags? People ask me if there were red flags. Maybe, but I call them pink flags because every time something came up that didn't quite sound right, I would ask him. And because I trusted him, you know, he always had a plausible reason why a package I sent wasn't accepted at the hotel or a card I sent to his son didn't get delivered. You know, there was always a reason. Like I said, they are very well trained on what they do. Now, what I found out too is that the storyline that they use is very similar for most people. So the women that have read my book, which is The Woman Behind the Smile, that have been scammed, say, oh my gosh, Deb, that's my story. And then the question is, well, how do you stop? Well, you stop, just you have to dead stop. If you feel like you're in that situation, you have to stop. And to think that he's going to come. If he doesn't come in 2 weeks, he's not coming. I have a woman that I was working with out in Idaho, and she goes, Deb, 95% of me thinks it's a scam, but 5% thinks he's flying here to visit. And I said, look, if he flies in to see you, I'm flying in to see you. But in the meantime, stop his food chain. You know, if you stop, if you're involved and you stop engaging, stop sending money, and they get mad, or he really puts you down for doing that, then it's a scammer that's getting desperate. You know, I never told Eric no. And I'm really curious, if I had gotten to that point where I said, Eric, I can't do this anymore, I don't know what he would have done. But, you know, the good part of me, the part that looks for the good in other people, has to believe this happened for a reason. And I believe it happened to me for a reason, because one woman in an interview said, God knew that if it happened to you and you were so well trained that it shouldn't have happened, that you would speak up and you would let people know to be careful. And that's true. And you know, whatever happens to Eric, I just told him to stop hurting other people. And do I know if that happened or not? I don't know. I do know that he stayed in touch with me. I got this, he revealed the scam in September, and he kept in touch with me on and off until January, till he realized that I had met the men that I'm now married to. And when he realized that I was going to be okay, then he said, Deb, this is the last time we're going to talk. And he promised some money one day, and I'm like, that'll never happen. But he'll get his due someday. You know, I just don't want him hurting anybody else. And my way of helping there is to alert women and men that this does happen. And it happens to very well-educated, well-financed people. And they would never, ever anticipate it happening to them. But it does. Now, to those who know of somebody this has happened to, mm-hmm. please do not try to out them to the public. Do not try to shame them, because as a victim of this, it's like domestic abuse was 50 years ago. We beat ourselves up enough. We don't need anybody else to be telling us how stupid we were. Because what'll happen is if you are a friend and you're going to act that way towards a friend, you're going to lose your friend. And your friend is going to be despondent. Your friend is not going to want to tell anybody. Your friend will never recover from this financially or emotionally. And it has led to many suicides. And as nurses, you certainly don't want that happening. You know, you want to at least lend an ear of support. And there are organizations, the organization I work with in Miami called the Society for Citizens Against Relationship Scams, or SCARS. You can report the scam to anyscams.com. And it's basically a database. You can join one of our support groups. It's not therapy, it's support. And by learning how it happens and how to recover from it is just very empowering for someone that has been through it. So be there to support and not condemn, because you never know, you know, when you yourself are going to be victim to some sort of fraud.
And how can our listeners get a copy of your book and also find out more about the business that you're involved in now?
Okay. Well, my book is called The Woman Behind the Smile, and it's available on Amazon. It's also on my website, and I encourage you to go to thewomanbehindthesmile.com. I have some real fun videos, and some of the work that I've done in the last few years is on that website. The company that I'm running, and my dad, Dr. Jack, is working with me, it can be found at Benfo Complete, B-E-N-F-O Complete, C-O-M-P-L-E-T-E.com. We actually manufacture a vitamin supplement, a synthetic form of vitamin B1 that is very effective in helping with neuropathy. Diabetics typically would have it, or folks that have had chemotherapy or some sort of issue. We have capsule form, we have a cream form, and it's a very effective non-drug to help diabetics with their neuropathy issues. So that's at benfocomplete.com. Or call Dr. Jack, my dad. I have an 800 number, 888-493-8014. Talk to Dr. Jack, and he'd be delighted to talk to you. So.
Well, I appreciate you talking about what was an incredibly painful experience that you went through. And I know every time you talk about it, you have to relive it, and you have to talk about how you felt at the time. As nurses, we understand that that peels a little layer of scar tissue off, and it has to grow back, and you're sharing a story that will have meaning to our listeners, certainly make them aware of dangers that they may not have even thought about, and give them a new perspective. So I appreciate that very much.
I appreciate you, you know, letting me do this, because I spoke at a women's group the other day, and a woman in her 80s came up to me afterwards, and she said, Deb, I just wanted you to know there is a woman that was in the group today that has had this happen, and she confided in me that it happened, and she spent a lot of money. She will never tell anybody else. And I said, well, I hope that because she's heard my story, that she'll reach out to me, or that she'll reach out to someone at SCARS and realize that she's not alone. And we all have those defining moments. We all have something that's happened to us. It may not be an online dating scam. It could be, you know, a friend of mine had dated a man in person for a year, and he turned out to have a family up north. You know, I had a very, very expensive therapy. My husband today had a very expensive divorce. We all go through something, and you know, we've just got to own the story 100% and move forward. And the best way to do that is to forgive. If someone hurts you, forgive them, and then forgive yourself and move on. And the more you talk about it, the more powerful you get. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely how I feel. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak up. Thanks, Pat.
Wonderful. This has been Debbie Johnson, Debbie Montgomery Johnson, the woman behind the smile, and Pat Iyer talking with you about online dating scams. As I often say, there are so many different ways that people come up with to make money, and we want to believe that 100% of them are going to be honest, but Debbie's story is certainly a reminder that there are people sitting right now while we're finishing up this podcast thinking about how they can scam somebody else. They're out there. They've got fertile imaginations, and you have to be aware that they are creative. And in this case, like the wolf that hid in the sheep's clothing.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned for our next Legal Nurse podcast. We'll be back next week with a new interview, and appreciate you being one of our listeners. Be sure to tell other Legal Nurse consultants about Legal Nurse podcast, and thank you for listening. Be sure to order a copy of my book, How to Manage Your LNC Business, using the button on the show notes for this podcast. You'll find these in iTunes or at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. And one final thing, the LNC Academy is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a sturdy foundation for your LNC practice. Are you interested in exploring the idea of coaching? Contact me to request a call. Go to http://lnc.tips/get help. Get help is one word. That link again is http://lnc.tips/get help. And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on legalnursebusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at legalnursebusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.